Let me tell you about something new.
It's time.
A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
G. Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are going to have Chef Z on a little later in the show, but we wanted to talk a little bit about the legacy of John Lewis. But before we do that, actually one of the things that we can kind of interweave with that, for those of you in Florida, especially Central Florida, just wanted to remind everybody, today is the last day to register to vote if you have not registered yet, or to change your voting information so that you can vote in the August 18th primary. So I wanted to make sure that you do that. So please do that today. You can, I think, go online at your whoever your supervisor of elections office is and get more information, or you can go down there. I know the one here in Orange County is downtown on Cayley Avenue. But just please remember to do that so that you won't get to the polls and be surprised because you cannot vote. Because you either didn't register or there's a flaw in your registration. Make sure all your information is accurate in terms of where you live and where your voting precinct is. Please know that so you don't come up on a precinct at 6:59 p.m. thinking that that's your precinct to vote, and it turns out that your precinct has changed. I work the elections for many years now. I see it happen. So please just want to make sure that you know that that's a possibility that you have to do that today. Anyway, to talk a little bit about John Lewis, who passed away recently, is our professor of African American history that we had here at Rollins, and he's left us physically, but he still is with us and helps us out. Professor Julian Shambliss, good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well and very thankful that you were able to join us today. So can you talk a little bit about John Lewis's legacy and, you know, what we should the takeaway from the contribution that he's made?
Well, you know, he's one of those figures from the, I hate to say golden age of civil rights, but the sort of modern civil rights movement, one of the last figures, because that generation, you know, is sort of passing away. And he started his own personal journey in a way that I think is always sort of instructive for students. And sort of growing up in Alabama, sort of being exposed to Jim Crow segregation and racism, and becoming a student activist, right? You think about the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, and that sort of youthful activism. And we forget, I think we sometimes forget the generational tensions around civil rights that happened during the 1960s. You know, the sort of tension about young John Lewis sort of pushing the older, more established figures in the civil rights movement to do more. And we rarely remember that he spoke at the March on Washington too, and a very striking speech that he gave, in some ways more challenging in tone, more defiant in intent than the speech that we remember, which is Martin Luther King's speech. And I don't say this to say that, like, you know, somehow Martin Luther King and John Lewis were at odds, but he was a figure whose pathway from a kind of young activist who worked in the grassroots to becoming an elected official who is trying to shape the policies and practice of the country, always with an eye towards equity, always with an eye towards helping African Americans. And some of his last public statements about inequality in healthcare, about sort of like the callous nature of the Trump administration. These are all things that remind us of a pathway in terms of like work and improvement of community and dedication that is born of sort of seeking social justice. So it's, you know, it's a legacy that is in the history books already, and will always, I think, you know, realistically be one that we will engage with. I mean, I really admire the work he did with working on March to create a sort of graphic novel series where he sort of like tells his story of civil rights activism. Which, of course, he himself had read the MLK and Montgomery bus boycott comic as a child, and that inspired his own journey, right? Like, so he sort of like completed the circle with that activity. So really, like, you know, a really inspirational figure, but one that's in some ways an attainable figure, right? Like, he was a young man, young African American from Alabama, who, you know, rose to the heights, driven specifically about fighting against injustice. So it's always interesting to think about John Lewis as someone who really dedicated himself to making his community better.
You know, and the good thing, the interesting thing about John Lewis, like you were talking about Martin Luther King versus John Lewis, and not necessarily putting them against each other, but the thing about Martin Luther King, we talk about Martin Luther King, but it's like he was kind of part of the past, even though we still celebrate him. You know, he's been gone for a while, but John Lewis was still a walking, talking piece of history, you know, still very tangible and still very active. I mean, it was, you wonder where he got his energy from, especially in the later years where he was, you know, he's been suffering with pancreatic cancer and stuff like that. But then you still saw him, and people were still speaking with him, even to his last days, just trying to get the understanding and the wisdom from him, and in terms of and inspiration from him in terms of how we make things better, you know, how we practice social justice here in America.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible, I think, for us to think about the modern civil rights movement without considering someone like John Lewis, because he was a both a reminder of how much could be done, but also, as you say, a contemporary figure who was still challenging what he saw as sort of fundamentally unjust and unfair practice and policy. And so, you know, he was always very, very cognizant that African Americans had made progress, but that they weren't done, right? And I think that's a really interesting narrative. I think we say it, but we don't necessarily always understand it, in the sense that, yeah, things have improved for African Americans, but that doesn't mean that like all problems have been solved. And the nature of social justice continues to expand because our understanding of the nature of oppression continues to expand, right? And so, yeah, he was an active figure, right? Boycotting boycott the inauguration of Donald Trump. Like, you know, he boycotted, I think, two inaugurations because he thought the people were ill fit for office. Never shy away for calling the government to do more. And especially, you know, he made comments about the virus, actually, and about healthcare inequality for African Americans and the consequences, which we know he was right. So, yeah, I think it's impossible for us to ignore his long legacy. And you wonder about, like, a new generation of leaders who don't have those direct ties to that period, but really are sort of following his footsteps, right? I think about something like the Black Lives Matter movement and its evolution, even in a sort of like short period that it's been going on. It looks very similar to some of the things that we might associate with John Lewis, very grassroots activism, but then now some of those leaders becoming very active in the political process and the policy process, and that makes sense. That's an evolution that we should look at as a natural one and not be dismissive, because, of course, it's easy when we think about reform and process that the protest on the street has to be married with some sort of practice. And John Lewis, you know, did the hard work of doing that, right? Like, he went from protesting on the street to a person who was, like, engaged in a redemptive practice, and that's really, really, really complicated.
Maybe misquoting or whatever, or you know, I don't know where it came from, but the saying about those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. And we're kind of, in a sense, repeating, you know, maybe to a different degree, things that happened like you said, at the heights of the civil rights era in the 1960s. And a lot of this that's what's happening now is that we just put, I guess in a way we're still trying to put what happened in the history books in a way. But what we're saying is that we left it in the past and we think, okay, the job was done then. And we didn't continue to follow up on what was done and making sure that, you know, what was done back in the 60s was improved upon and that it grew and that it stuck. Because I think a lot of what's happening now is that because certain things just did not stick in terms of how you treat people and the rights of people. I mean, like I said, right now, just trying to get people to go and vote or making sure that they're registered to vote today is still an issue, even though people fought for it. And so now, you know, we've got, you know, people that have either taken it for granted, you know, I can go vote anytime, or you have people that say, well, my vote doesn't really count. And the thing about it is, too, and the other thing because I do work the elections and I see a lot, is that, you know, a lot of people are not being informed voters. They're not, you know, doing their homework on the candidates and the issues that are coming forward, you know. And then there's this issue in terms of trying to suppress the vote again with not allowing the mail-in ballots. Now, I just got mine the other day, and I kind of have to have mine because I'm working the elections. I can't go and vote on election day, you know. But there's a number of reasons, you know, that people, you know, should be able to vote, you know, either early voting or mail-in ballots. And no, not all the mail-in ballots are corrupt. You know, things do happen. You know, we as humans are flawed, so the systems that we make are flawed. So, you know, things do happen. But how do we, you know, I mean, I know this is something that he would probably still be, you know, battling, you know, because you have our commander-in-chief saying, you know, that there's a problem with the mail-in ballots. And I'm sure that Mr. Lewis would probably say, you know, that problem as it is, if, you know, people don't even, you know, try to exercise their right or privilege to vote. What do you think?
Well, you know, first thing is that there is no evidence, historical evidence or contemporary evidence, that absentee ballot voting is ineffective, right? Like, we've had absentee ballot voting since the 19th century. So what the Republicans, the current Republican Party, does not want to support absentee ballot voting because they believe that it will increase turnout, and if they increase turnout, it's detrimental to their success. So, like, that's the almost the entire reason that they're against absentee ballot voting. Vote by mail is done in parts of the country already, and absentee ballot system has been in place, like I said, for the 19th century. It's just a question of volume, right? But ultimately, the theory of voting that the Republican Party has championed for the last 30 years is, like, the fewer people to vote, the better off it is for them. Because they can get their base out with, like, a kind of, like, you know, sort of negative reference voting. Like, I hate immigrants, I hate foreigners, I hate, you know, like, you dog whistle, make the round break, use racial animus to get my base out to vote and suppress all these minorities from voting. So I think, you know, this has always been a frustration. I think it's definitely a frustration for the generation that John Lewis was a part of, right? Like, voting was a primary tool for Black liberation coming out of the Civil War. I mean, like, Reconstruction was, at some level, congressional Reconstruction was about ensuring that Black people could vote. And when they voted in large numbers, that fundamentally changed the landscape of the South. And the end of Reconstruction and the rise of Jim Crow was all about excluding Black people from voting. That's what the violence was about, right? That's why they had the Knight Rider. That's why they had the Ku Klux Klan, the White League, killing people. And it was to prevent Black people from voting. So the nature of, like, voter suppression and its root in political power and white supremacy is that history is well documented. The reason that Black people don't vote in the modern era is a little bit more nuanced, in part because it's very difficult to manage a complex system, and at some level, fighting against Jim Crow segregation, which is at some level binary, right? If someone tells you you can't come into a building because you're Black, you know exactly what you're fighting. You're fighting to walk into the building. When you start talking about voting and democracy, and, you know, Black people are not all the same, and in fact, Democratic politics is always much more complicated because it is big tent politics, meaning there's a lot of people who have to decide on a policy, whereas Republican politics by default is almost the exact opposite. It's everything is okay, don't change anything, right? So the message is much clearer. So for Black people, their critiques really started in the late 60s and early 70s around structural racism, have always been very difficult. And at some level, you know, I continue narrative around structural racism, exactly what, you know, our current activism is about. It's what Black Lives Matter is about, is structural racism, right? You know, I was asked recently, you know, there are a lot of white people who don't believe in Black Lives Matter, and they would like to talk about how all lives matter. And I was like, well, you can't do that until you prove to me that you understand that Black Lives Matter, right? Like, as long as I can, like, go through and catalog a systemic set of things where, like, Black people, for no other reason other than them being Black, are detrimentally affected by the way society operates, then we're going to have to say Black Lives Matter, because, like, we haven't worked out as a group that's an affirmative, right? Because you haven't done that, right? So the reason that people are dying, Black people are dying at such high rates during the pandemic, isn't because the virus hates Black people. The virus don't know. It's just because the system has weakened black people, and so they're susceptible to death in a way that white people are not. So for black people, this critique around structure, which is very complicated, a critique around structure is always very complicated because it means that you have to pinpoint the exact moment of detriment and offer up some kind of solution that has to parse out both this is a thing that's negative while at the same time saying like this is a thing that's positive, right? If it was just about tearing down the system, like revolution, right? Like, oh, that's relatively simple. But changing the system so that it's more fair and equitable is by default much more complicated. And like democracy is about not about ideal solutions, about the best solution that you get at any one time. And so for black people being critical of the system, this idea that it can be transformed whole cloth has run into the reality of like how democracies work, right? And this has led to disillusionment, you know, for that generation that John Lewis was in. That's a reason a lot of those people march in the street and then actually join the system, right? Like you can think about like it being a kind of perfect evolution. They march in the street, they got the right to vote, you know, they got that right protected, you know, despite like massive resistance. And like then they join the government and try to work on creating policy. And that isn't nearly as some of it's not nearly as sexy as saying I'm going to burn it all down. I mean, I think about this in terms of rhetoric versus practice, right? Mm-hmm. When you have a rhetoric of transformation, you can say that because it's rhetoric, right? It's imaginary. It's inspiring people to think about a different format, a different way of doing things. But then there's the actual practice, like the levers of power. And they work slow, and they require sometimes procedural things. Like, and there's always this sort of like sense that, especially for people of color, these procedural things are deliberately set up in a way to forestall change, right? To forestall improvement to how society operates. And so the relationship between protest and the street and action in terms of policy is always a very complicated one. Mm-hmm. And the question becomes, as you say, you know, how educated are people, at least, you know, how educated are black people about this? I mean, one of the things very interesting about right now is that the critiques that black people have made about the system have gotten more traction with white people because white people have been failed by the system. Right, like that's part of the reason why this is happening, right? So the pandemic has shown white people like, oh, the system is not working. And now like you have a bunch of black people going, I know. I said this. And they're like, wait, maybe you were, whoa, yeah, well, what did you say again? Like, I'm about this. And they're like, huh, yeah, okay. I can see that, right? I mean, like the pandemic, it is the twin element of the pandemic and that sort of consequence of the government saying, I mean, Donald Trump has essentially said to white people what the government said to black people for 100 years. Oh, I'm in trouble. Well, you know, work on that. Right? Like, you know, I need money. Well, you know, bootstrap. It's on you. Right, like it's basically what the government said to black people for like ever, and just he just said it to like all people, right? And they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem fair. And you know, eyes have been open, and like, and you know, black people have been talking about a structural inequality for you know 100 years. Right, like you can trace it back, you know, W.B. Du Bois, you know, like W.B. Du Bois talked about the police, right, in 1903. So it's not like black people are the foremost experts on systemic oppression in the United States, right? Like, they just know. And so white people are like, wait a minute, right? Like, the pandemic
really does happen.
Right, yeah. It's like a revelation. Black people are like, it's not a revelation. It's this thing that's broken because this person does this, right? So this is a unique moment, but you're right. Like, there's always this question of education and political imagination. I mean, this idea of political imagination in the context of African Americans, like, African Americans have always imagined a more free society, like they've had to. And the consequences of that have been beneficial at some level to everybody, right? Not just to black people, but to white people as well. So, you know, we're sort of in this unique moment where that legacy of black political imagination around freedom is intersecting with another moment of crisis. And we'll see if some of these things, like defunding the police, which is really only about allocation of resources, right? Like, most municipalities spend way a lot of money on policing and not nearly enough money on social workers, on healthcare, on job training or after school programs, right? Like, they'll put little pins in that, but they don't put nearly the same sort of like work into like building community capacity to help itself, to resolve conflicts without, you know, turning into law enforcement. Like, they spend money on equipment that is designed for urban, you know, warfare in places where, you know, they're not really going to encounter warfare. But of course, if you show up with a tank, people are going to react like you showed up with a tank. If you show up with flowers, people will react like you showed up with flowers, right? Like, they may not, it does, you know, there's a sort of like countervailing force created by your show up force, right? Like, we talk about proportionality in global affairs, right? We don't want to respond out of proportion to like the provocative action of another country, and like that's an acceptable sort of like formula. But in policing, someone calls the police, and they show up with like an army of highly, you know, highly armed people with body armor, to you know, establish order, and that has a psychological as well as a practical effect, right? Like, it's, you know that the police are there, right? So, you know, these are really sophisticated questions, and it really becomes a responsibility of African Americans to sort of think through what they want the process to be. And I think someone like John Lewis was always very consistent in his message about turning up the vote, participating in the process, right?
Right. Right.
And this is also one of the things that been a goal for Republicans, like rolling back monitoring around things like voting is a very deliberate act, right? Like, it's not an accident to say that, you know, the Republicans have targeted any sort of mechanism that makes it easier for you to vote, be it, you know, early voting, be it the number of polling places that are open, be it, you know, this idea, this sort of mythology around voter fraud. Because there are cases of voter fraud, but are there ever cases of voter fraud at the level that Republicans claim? No. You can always find a case of, you know, someone doing a voter fraud thing, but is it, like, endemic? Like, is there a danger that voting is going to be made illegitimate because of fraud? There's no evidence of that. That's just a mythology that Republicans love to talk about. And again, ultimately, voter turnout or suppressing voter turnout is very important to Republicans remaining in office. This is why Donald Trump railed against it. It has nothing to do with fraud. And remember, this is a person who votes absentee himself, right? So it's not like he doesn't, he's not familiar with the process. And I just say we've had absentee violence since the 19th century. But the scale is a concern, and that's why Democrats have been asking for money to help states ramp up this, and they've been denied because if they get that money and people are able to, like, you know, mail in ballot, what would be the consequences for the Republican Party? Like, their assumption is that it will be bad. And that assumption is disingenuous. I mean, it's sinister and really bleak to assume that because more people are going to vote, my party is going to lose. Now, I think there's truth to that from the Republican standpoint in Florida, because they're more like registered Democrats, and it's the gerrymandering of like districts and all this stuff that allows for Republicans to maintain their control. But you know, it's a razor thin margin. It's suppressing the vote. Keeping the voter turnout low is very important to their success. But you know, at some level, there's a wink and a nod here that they don't believe in democracy by saying we don't want people to vote. And we all should be, you know, concerned about that, like, you know, because what are they going to do? Because I do think that a large number of people, regardless of color, are looking at the current state of sort of distress in the country, and they blame people in office, and people in office are Republican. I mean, there's never any sort of shock that if you overlay a map of the former state of the Confederacy and you look at a map of like where COVID-19 is exploding, that the map looks very similar, right? These are places that have long, you know, rejected at some level the regulatory state, right? Like, you know, government doing stuff, and under supported public health, under supported all these other things, right? So, you know, this is these are old discussions that have new importance because of the pandemic. But from a perspective of like the legacy of a figure like John Lewis, like, you know, some of the same things he was talking about in 1990, 1980, 1970, 1960s, they still matter. And the solutions that he advocated for still matter, right? Show up, vote, be a part of the process. Like you say, you volunteer at the polls. That's very important. It's also very important for institutions that can to apply to be a polling place, because it's a process, right? Like, you can apply. So black churches, black schools, you know, black nonprofits that want to be polling places, they should go through that process and apply. And you should volunteer at polling places, not one person, but like, you know, get together groups of like 5 and 10 and systematically go to polling places. Because like one black person, man, but you know, you want to have like more than one black person working at a polling place and paying attention to the process and supporting the process. And so, and also having their white colleagues know who they are and like understand, like, you know, they're involved in the democratic process. Because a lot of white people assume that black people don't show up to the polls because they don't care and don't understand these sort of like passive and then also aggressive ways that black people are disincentivized from voting.
We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Professor Julian Chambliss from Michigan State University, and we are talking about the legacy of John Lewis, and also just a reminder that today is the last day to register to vote for the Florida primary election. When we come back, I want to ask you, Professor, about who is the next John Lewis? Who do you perceive to be the next John Lewis? This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arclitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Welcome back, Power Hour. I Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Professor Julian Chambliss, and want to find out from you who you perceive. Number one, do we need another John Lewis to step forward right now? Is his legacy enough, or should his legacy be that we lead to other people to take up the mantle? Who is the next John Lewis, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, first, you're always looking towards the next generation of leaders to emerge, right? No one would say, like, Freddie Douglass died, so there's not going to be another. And, like, someone else has to, like, do that work, right? And that can go back in time, like it's always the case. So there's always going to be someone else. You know, this question of who's the next John Lewis, you know, it's most likely going to be African-American woman. Like you think about someone like Stacey Dash, is that her name? The lady from Georgia who ran for governor.
Oh, okay.
Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams,
yeah, Stacey Dash is an actress. Stacey Abrams. And, of course, like I say, the leaders, some of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, one of the things about social justice in the 21st century is, of course, the intersectional nature, right? Like, it's not just simply about race. It's also about gender oppression, about sexual orientation, so like sort of like Black queer voices are impossible to ignore, both in terms of like a politics, a contemporary grassroots politics, and you know how does that translate into policy, right? In some ways, one of the most impactful legacies of the Obama administration is the sort of expansion of LGBTQ rights, and he's never gonna. It's not that people don't talk about that, but you know, that is really like that's the reality, right? And for a younger generation, their view of diversity is predicated on a much more inclusive set of ideas around queer identity, trans identity, so on and so forth. And so, a kind of intersectional approach represented by for the Black female politician and Black female activist is inescapable. I mean, that's part of the reason, like, Joe Biden has promised to pick a Black, I think, she's promised to pick a female running mate, but realistically, it's going to be a Black woman, right?
Okay.
Whether or not it's a mayor of Atlanta or the mayor of Washington, D.C., or Kamala Harris, or I don't know who else it might be. Like, he doesn't have a lot of options when you go, like, it's got to be a Black woman. that seems to be a reality that's inescapable for the Democratic Party to be successful. He does need to pick a Black woman, I think. I think that would speak directly to where the activism is, like it's with Black people, you know, who has been the most ardent in their support of the Democratic Party. Well, statistically, it's been Black women by far. Black people, sure, but Black women in particular, definitely, sure, right? So that becomes a kind of default reality if you're thinking about electoral politics and from a kind of purely numbers and structural standpoint. So, I do think about some of these elected or people who run for election who are African American and Black female politicians and activists as these sort of viable figures that marry that and shadow, marry that sort of legacy and shadow that sort of process that John Lewis did, right? Like from the grassroots into public life. Everything is going to be a little bit different in the reality of a 21st century America. I mean, I think at some level, the politics of racial animus that Donald Trump has sort of like championed are much more dangerous in some ways toward the national psyche than they have been in the past, right? But I do think that, you know, it's that formula, like that form of people who are able to articulate what some of these grassroots demands are and then think about them in terms of policy, that is something that's very important right now. And it's something that, you know, again, speaks to where people's concerns are, right? Their concerns are with the system, regardless of color, that is failing people. And within that, Black people are being failed more than anything. But by any stretch of the imagination, you can look at the death rate from COVID-19 and go like, oh, well, that's a number that shows failure, especially when compared with other countries in the Western world, right? So in the face of that kind of failure, what are you looking for? A government to be more responsive, more caring, using its power to help people. And again, these are demands that we can trace back through the Black political imagination for decades upon decades upon decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's never I don't know what Joe Biden exactly thinks. He's a cagey, cagey is not the right word. I can imagine that he is mulling over this decision, and hopefully he'll make the right one. Like, you know, saying that he's going to pick a woman, yeah, that makes sense. But if it's not a Black woman, I don't know how that'll go over, right? Like, there was a moment early in this process that I think people thought he was going to pick Amy Klobuchar, and I was like, if he does that, he might as well just, like, give up and walk away. Give up and just like let Donald Trump win. That won't work. And then she backed out and said, don't pick me. I'm like, oh, okay. I would just assume that somebody somewhere in his sort of like cadre of advising is going like, dude, just pick a Black lady, a competent Black lady. I mean, even Val Demings has been mentioned, and I can sort of see why. There's definitely a question mark there. Like, I think logically it has to be a Black woman that is running mate. But does he think that, right? Like, does that old white guy think that? Like, that's a different question. So.
Professor Julian Chambliss, he is with the Consortium for Critical Diversity in a Digital Age Research, or CEDR. He's also with the Val Berryman Curator of History at Michigan State University Museum. Professor Chambliss, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate you taking the time out to help us honor John Lewis's legacy. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Good luck, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have Chef Z come on soon. The number, if you ever want to chime in, and I meant to give it out earlier, is 516 516- 387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good morning and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we want to again thank Professor Julian Chambliss, who formerly of Rollins College, but he is with Michigan State University now, and want to thank him for being there. Chef Z, are you with us yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Fine, and yourself?
Doing quite well, except it's just so dang hot these days. I mean, we had summer before summer, and now we're a month into summer, and it's just, you know, I know we've got a few months to go, a couple months at least to go. So how have you been doing? Everything well? Are you well?
Yes, I am. I'm laughing at when you said it's so dang hot. That's the kind of heat that you have. That's the only thing you can say to explain it. Even my son, who's an avid outdoorsman, I've heard the words from him, it's too hot this morning. He even asked how much longer is summer, so that lets you know it is so dang hot.
It is so dang hot. That's all you can say. I mean, and I kind of like summer. I'm a t-shirt and shorts person, mm-hmm. You know, and I like going in the pool and I like going to the beach and stuff. But I mean, I wanted to work a little. You have to get out. I was mowing the lawn this weekend. You have to get out really early, and you have to find that sweet spot, because if, for those that don't mow the lawn, you can't mow it too early because it's too damp. You can't,
yes.
You're not supposed to mow your grass wet. So you still got to do
right.
That. But so you've got to find that sweet spot where you can't mow, you can mow, but you know, grass is dried out a little bit, but you don't get yourself cooked all up. Because that's basically what it
and
is.
And that, unfortunately, is that I don't even think that time even exists right now.
No, not really.
That's a particular time. That's a far. There's no sweet spot here lately.
Yeah.
But hey,
there's hot night. And hotter. There's no cool.
I know it's rough. It's rough. But you know, if we just practice on being cool and staying cool and staying indoors at the appropriate times, we can make it through it. And I'm like you. I am a summer girl. I love to be warm. I love sunshine on my face, but I'm with you. There's been some what we call hellish days, and it's really been hot.
I also love air conditioning. I do love it very much.
It's hard to cool off, I was just saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, they tell us stay hydrated, drink water and stuff like that. But we kind of, you know, this is the time we want to get, I think, a little bit more creative with our beverages, too, around this time of year. So you got any tips?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I have a few. One thing I can say is that as much as we all would like a cold beer or a nice frosty pina colada, one of the ways to definitely not cool off is drinking alcohol. Alcohol, unfortunately, it raises our body temperatures. It has a lot of adverse effects, especially because the majority of us who consume alcohol, I shouldn't say us, of you guys, majority of people who consume alcohol usually do it in excess, and not necessarily mean you're drunk, but you usually have more than you should, and that usually raises our body temperature. So those of us who try to drink to cool off, they miss the boat when they drink alcohol. So you want to try to actually avoid it as much as you can. You know, a shot here or there, or, you know, one ice drink here or there. But if you can get that alcohol-free, it's really going to help you. And we all know, just like you said, water is going to be the number one thing that's going to cool us off. And it will help cool our body down. It's like an inside cool down. But even too much, too cold of water too fast is not good for you as well. So you just want to, you know, drink water within reason. Don't overindulge yourself, but drink it as much as you need it. Another thing that can help us with cooling off is coconut water. Coconut water is awesome. And, you know, it used to be a time when it was hard to find and it was really expensive. And then manufacturers caught on with the rest of the world and saw what we had been missing. And now we find out that coconut water, like the rest of the world already knew, is great to help you cool off. And it has a lot of vitamins and minerals in it, so it's really good for you in cooling you off and replacing vitamins and minerals. And the coconut just has 101 beneficial properties that we probably could do a whole show on just coconut. But coconut in moderation is good for you, period. Another thing that helps cool us, I'm listening.
No, I was going to say, I even see it now where they're selling it to the kids, and I didn't realize it. I bought some, didn't realize it was the kids drink until I went to buy it, but still, it was good. Something called Creative Root that they're selling in terms of kids' juices, but now they're selling it in different flavors. The one thing I would guess caution is that watch out for some of the stuff that's, I guess, has additives, has flavors and stuff.
Yeah.
I've been trying to kind of vary my stuff, vary my juices, vary my water, you know, and getting some of the other waters. And one of them I found out had caffeine in it. And so I was like, okay, that I'm not backing off of that one. And I, by the way, in terms of your advice, I'd already started backing off of the alcohol. It's just not, there's more cons than pros to the alcohol. So I've been trying to just come up with creative, maybe virgin versions of some of the drinks that I like.
Good for you. And you are absolutely right. I concur with you checking out the labels, because everything is not good. Now, there is an app. It's called Fooducate. Thank you, Fooducate, and you're welcome for me shouting you out. It's Fooducate, and what it does is you can actually scan the label of a product that you think is really good for you or one that you know is really bad, and it actually will give the product a grade. And it will explain to you why it graded it the way it did. And then if there is a product there that doesn't have a grade, it will ask you while you're there to just scan the label and some key things about the product and submit it, and they will go through and they will actually send you back a grade and then add it to the app. I love it. So Fujikade is really good, and it not only is great for drinks, but it's also any other food product or anything that we consume. So, yes, it is very important that you check the labels, because there are a lot of drinks out there that are packaged and have keywords that we look for that are pretenders that we think are really healthy, and then you turn them over, and they have more sugar than Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're not good for us, and they tend to make us even more sick, you know, than something that we thought was actually helping us. So, yes, be very careful about the additives. Normally, if they have a strong color to them and the color is not something that is naturally occurring within that particular fruit or genre of what it says you're drinking, then most likely it has some type of additives, some type of chemicals that you may possibly want to avoid. That's like, for instance, blue raspberry. We know that
uh-huh.
raspberries are not blue. So something had to make these blue. And so
okay.
I have to fight my little ones all the time about blue raspberry.
Blue raspberry.
You know, not natural. So there's a lot of
yeah.
repercussions from that. Or just really, really red drinks.
Yeah.
Even if you have a drink that's naturally mixed with strawberries,
mm-hmm.
it will be more pink than it will be red. There's very
tomatoes
few things
too.
Outside. Well,
tomatoes
yeah,
too.
Tomatoes, yeah, raw, and especially if they're raw, they will be more on the pink side than they will be red. And the only thing that really, really occurs to be like a deep hue out and beets and pomegranate, things like that will come out. But if you see other things that these manufacturers have made us accustomed to, those are not good if their colors are off from that. But
mm-hmm.
back to the matter of hand of us cooling off, because I could go on about that as well. Peppermint
yeah.
and mint.
Yeah.
Yeah, peppermint or mint. They have a perennial cooling effect, and they're really good. Especially when you add it to a drink, you know, they give you that cooling effect, which helps on the inside, and it's really, really good to add to lemonade. I love a nice lemon, basil, and mint lemonade or infused water. All you need is some, just squeeze all you can out of a whole lemon, and then I chop up about 3 or 4 whole fresh leaves of basil, because basil is a natural sweetener. People don't know that. Cut some of that tanginess from the lemon.
It depends on the type of basil, right? So is it like the sweet
yes.
basil?
Yeah, our sweet basil, and I go for common basil, because when you usually go to the grocery store, you're usually going to pick up the more common basil. So yes, but the sweet basil, that's going to be it.
And
it's then
the
your mint,
it's the basil in the let me just say this: is the basil in the produce aisle, not the basil in the
yes.
spice aisle. Okay, it's the fresh,
yes. fresh
basil.
Yes, fresh basil. Yes, that's going to give you the best effect. And then mint, you can have peppermint, or you can have the regular mint, the cooling spearmint. All of those mints in the mint family are going to produce that cooling effect. They just have a teeny bit different flavor profile, and one is going to be a little stronger than the other, and everybody, the jury's out on which one's stronger, peppermint or spearmint, or you know, those different ones. Whatever you can find, if it's a mint, take it. It'll work. It'll work for you. Also, there's my favorite other drink is cucumber and lemon. Cucumbers are
okay.
really good. They will add to the cooling effect. You know, that's why a lot of people like cucumber, the little eye patches with the cucumber. They have a lot of effects to help us reduce swelling and other things that go on within the body. But another great factor about cucumbers is they're going to help cool you down internally. So not only drinking it, but even having a nice cucumber salad, cold cucumber salad, or even a cucumber and apple gazpacho, which is my favorite. cold soup will actually cool you down as well. And my number one thing that I like out of the fruits and vegetables to cool you off, and that's a watermelon. Ugh, a nice cold watermelon that has a lot of electrolytes in it, watermelon, and a lot of water. That's why it's called watermelon. So it will definitely cool you off. Even if you get one that's been sitting around outside, you get them straight out the field, believe it or not, they still will have some cooling effect because of the electrolytes and things like that within a watermelon. So watermelon is really good. It made me think about a memory in Rock Springs, or what do we call it? What's the other formal name for Rock Springs? No, Rock Springs is in Apopka.
Yes,
it's in Apopka.
Right.
Yeah, and I think there's another name that it's called. But the water there, you know, it's like 72 degrees. So that's actually on the way to something being cold. And so as with my family, Kelly Park, that's what it is.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Kelly Park.
Way up there.
Yeah, Kelly Park. So my family, we would go there, and we would always bring several watermelons. And the first thing that my parents would do is everybody put their name on their watermelon and throw it in the spring because it was cold. And it will cool your watermelon off. So then, you know, after a while, you see one of the kids kind of bring in one of our watermelons, you know, and cut it up, and we'd eat it and stuff like that. The good old pre-COVID days.
Yep. Tell me about it.
You know, you wouldn't dare do that today, but, you know.
Where was COVID then?
Huh?
I said, where was COVID then? We weren't worried about COVID then. Where was COVID then?
I know. You think we'd be stronger than we are, but yeah. So now here's another surprising thing that people don't think will cool you off, and that is milk and honey.
Really?
Yes. So according to this healthy food, Food TV, they say that milk and honey, and cold milk with honey actually does wonders for your body. It will actually cool you down. So who would have thunk it, right? But you know, a good glass of cold milk, although I don't consume milk, and a lot of my African American counterparts don't and shouldn't, but some of us that do, a good glass of cold milk. You know, I see people all the time will just say, can I get a glass of cold milk? So adding honey to that makes it not only beneficial, but it works wonders for you. I myself would probably do cashew or soy milk, even though I don't even consume as much soy milk, but another nut milk as well, I'm sure would be just as beneficial to you. Another way you can cool off is what I just mentioned it earlier is pomegranate juice. It actually has some properties and is marketed as a body control, a temperature activator, kind of like a thermostat for your body, pomegranate juice. So that's really good for you. So getting yourself a little, you know, little thing of pomegranate juice and keeping it really cold, you know, in the fridge, or even having like a pomegranate slushy is a nice treat to cool yourself off. Especially if you're menopausal, it just does wonders. Does wonders for you. Don't ask me how I know.
I thought I was past menopause, but I'm still having the issues with the heat. It's just ridiculous. You know, that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about cooling off. So, yeah.
Yes.
So.
I know. I'm on the young side of it, so I'm just starting. So, you know, in the midst of what is going on here, what is happening to me, you know, just go and grab you a little pomegranate slushy, and it'll work wonders for you. And it's also, you know, an excellent source of vitamin C. It works well for cramps and stuff. And I didn't realize it for being premenopausal that it was so good for you. I just knew it had other benefits from it, so I would enjoy it anyway. So when I found out not only will that help other female issues, but it will help cool you down in the middle of your power surge, I was all excited about it. So that was a really good thing. Now, another thing that can cool you off is foods high in vitamin C. So vitamin C is really good cooling you off, like oranges and lemons, grapefruit, those things like that. Those are really good for cooling you off. I think about, you know, like your orange ice cream and your cooling off an orange, you know, and us, when I was growing up, we would enjoy really, really cold oranges and stuff.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, I remember growing up eating a lot more of the citrus, but especially oranges and tangerines for me when I was growing up. And so nothing like a cold orange or tangerine. But the thing is, you just got to be careful, y'all. You know, if you're, you know, acid prone, just maybe not eat it on an empty stomach or something like that. That's all.
Yes.
I would throw that in there.
Yes. And not eating it, not, you know, like when we were little, basically we would wake up eating them and we go to bed eating them because they were just right outside the window.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we age, so does our bodies. So, yeah, you don't want to overconsume anything, but it don't hurt every once in a while to get you one or two and just have a few slices out, you know, to help cool yourself off. And you are right. Careful with your consumption because it will, you know, it has a negative effect. Now, another thing when you want to cool off is you might want to forego something that you just said, caffeine. You might want to let go of the caffeine because caffeine is going to, for healthy adults and most children, it has an effective. Caffeine does what it does. It gets you going. And so you're trying to calm your body down. You're trying to cool off. Mm-hmm. And so caffeine is not going to have a positive effect on you. Now, if you're someone like my son, you pray for the caffeine because he has ADHD. So we pray for it. But for the most part, healthy individuals, yes, they should avoid it. And if you're someone like me who's a Southerner and there's nothing like a wheat iced tea, ain't nothing better. The only way you can say it. now trying the decaffeinated versions, you know, it seems like everything you have to watch out for, you know, you don't want the chemicals, you don't want the caffeine, you don't want the, but this is your one and only chance, your one and only the one and only go around. So you might as well go around the best way you can. And if it's available, and especially at home and you see it in the store, the decaffeinated teas, green tea, you might want to make that switch.
And green tea is popular and, you know, supposed to be good if you're trying to maintain or lose weight. You know, it's kind of a catch-22 because green tea does have a lot more caffeine. So, yeah, I usually look for like a decaf green tea. I know it's probably defeating
it's a
the purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different type. It's the benefits are different from you having a green tea versus black tea. And a green tea is more of its natural state than the black tea. It's been roasted and it's been handled differently. So actually, yes, there is more in the whiter teas, but the health benefits and what you're consuming is actually different. So the clearer your teeth, the better it is for you overall. It's going to have different health benefits. But if you are going to drink that black tea, then if you can find it decaffeinated, go for it. Then you also can take the teas that aren't necessarily really teas, like your hibiscus flower, your lemongrass. These are not really teas. They have another technical name, and you think I would have remembered it because I even just taught a tea class this weekend. But they're not considered true teas. They're flowers and herbs, and those generally are decaffeinated as well, naturally decaffeinated. So, again, like you said earlier, check your labels. If you have an opportunity, go to Fooducate. It will grade your beverage and tell you what's actually beneficial. And I like it. It gives you the pros and cons of whatever it is that you're consuming to let you know if it's good for you in your current condition or not. I really, really like that. And then eating foods high in fiber, I know it sounds silly, but keeping your gut health up to date, it really helps your body regulate its temperature because you're also being your healthiest. Your body isn't busy doing other things. So then when that exterior temperature comes along and it becomes unbearable, your body, it's not busy. It can actually react better to what it is that you're doing. No, it won't be able to cool off your surroundings, but it will make it more tolerable for you to handle your surroundings. Like, for instance, when you see someone with high blood pressure, they sweat really bad, a lot of them, and very easily their body is busy. Their heart is over here racing. It's doing things, and your body is just struggling to try to keep up. And so one of the reactions that you get is you start sweating. Your body is doing whatever it can to try to cool you back down, and sometimes it's doing it profusely, and it's kind of like your body is in, like, it's in a state of panic. I got to cool off. I got to get, you know, my heart's doing things over here. So if you try to keep your optimal gut health and your gut health and your immune system is what I was trying to say, under control, the food that you eat and things like that, they'll be more beneficial to you. And of course, it's my not only just my opinion, but just health research and health, you know, practitioners. These are just obvious things that just happen.
Right, because like, I have hyperthyroidism, which causes some other issues and stuff like that. But one of the things is because of that, if my thyroid is a little bit out of whack, I can tell because my tolerance for heat is just worse, you know. But and the other thing that you got to do too is just keep your stress levels down. And this, I know it's hard to do right now, but it just makes you agitated, and then, you know, you tolerate things less, including the heat.
You are absolutely right. And it's just, you know, I was someplace and I had to have on a mask, but we were outdoors. And my husband, I didn't even know I was panicking, and he just said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I'm sorry, I need to take this thing off. And I'm just about to, literally, I felt like I was going to die because it was just so hot." With the mask on. And he finally just said, "No one wants to see you passed out with the mask on your face. Take it off." And I said, "Thank you." But I didn't know at the time I had stressed myself out so bad. And I was sweating, and my whole body changed, my whole demeanor, and he just looked over at me. He just said, "You look like you were struggling," and I didn't even realize it. And so, yes, it's hard to get stressed out. And I think because I have pulmonary embolisms, and so
the mask, you know, is a catch 22 for me. Do I do I want to wear a mask? Yeah. Am I having difficulty wearing the mask? Yeah. But am I going to wear the mask? Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to try my best to wear it as much as I can. But, you know, you're right. The stress, you know, the stress. So now I just have to tell myself. And, of course, I try to make the best decision on do I really need to go there? Do I need to be there? Of both things. But, yes, you're absolutely right. Keeping your stress level down is difficult, but it's something that, you know, you have to say it's a part of our life now. It's part of the new normal.
Right.
And keep your stress down because you can. You can have a panic attack, raise your body temperature, and then that's when you get into having strokes. There's a lot of things that go wrong when we get too warm. And refraining from activity. Sometimes I'm going from point A to B or, you know, you just you're doing things and you just happen to be out in the middle of the day. And believe me, for me, it's a very short trip. But I'll see people walking. You know, this is recreation. I understand if you got to walk somewhere and things like that. These are recreational activities I'm talking about. There are people out walking. There are people out. I see them getting their boat out because they want to get on the lake. But we're talking about like between 11 and 1, 2, 3 o'clock. They're starting these activities. And I'm like, these are the hottest hours of the day. And like you said, they're not sweet spot time. Don't start an activity during those hours. You know, if you have already gotten your boat out on the water, you know, by 10, you're great. You know, between 11 and 3, you're out there, the wind's going. Of course, hopefully you're covered up. But 11, 12 o'clock is not the perfect time to launch your boat. Or to start off on a walk, you know, and
or mow the lawn.
Mow the lawn. There's two neighbors, and my mom makes several jokes every day because we're just waiting for one to like for them to just not come back around the corner. Why would you start walking at one p.m. when it's 100 degrees? It's not good, you know. So. So Rob always knows, he says, one day one of them ain't coming back. But
it's just because it's really a time right now where you have to take that extra minute and that extra breath to kind of process and think things through and plan a little bit better because things are so different now. And then, you know, on top of that, you have all this extra heat. You really got to take a minute and say, okay, if I'm going out, like my outdoor stuff is like, it's going to be done very early in the morning or, you know, it's going to be like late in the evening, you know, because the bad part about it, either case right now, it's still around almost 80 degrees either way.
I know.
Yeah. Am I going to do this when it's 80 degrees or am I going to do this when it's 90 degrees? Okay. So that's your choice. You know, 97 or 100, like you said. So, anyway, so what you got going on, Chef? Okay. What's coming up?
Well, what's coming up for me is what isn't coming up? There's a lot of stuff going on in my life right now. You know, I have a nonprofit organization called Kitchen Life Skills, and part of our mission is to help reduce food insecurity and help people overcome any of those obstacles that would prevent them from doing that. And so each year for back to school, we have a personal hygiene drive and giveaway. So we are in the middle of our personal hygiene drive. Our deadline is the end of the month, and we have several outdoor events that we're actually tagging onto this year to help distribute period supplies and personal hygiene supplies to young girls. Normally we would be saying going back to school, but we can still say it, going back to school, but just going however they're going back, they're still going to need those supplies. So So mm-hmm. we're going to be there for our Lake and Sumter County residents for them to get those things. And we're on Facebook at Kitchen Life Skills, and there's no E in kitchen.
Okay.
And life is spelled L-Y-F-E. And so if you want to know more about that, you can go to there and call our Hello Beautiful Girl period project. So that's going on. I'm getting
okay.
all those girls out. We just wrapped up something I've been doing this summer is teaching virtually a lot of cooking classes, and I'm enjoying that. I know that there is nothing like the real thing, having people there. And I love cooking for a group of people, especially because I like to share the recipe results with everyone so they could uh-huh. actually see that what I actually made actually tastes good. So that's the only thing that I really miss. But we just got through doing a Discovering the Flavors of Africa class, and I think I'm going to do that again. I really enjoyed that. And guess what? This is the part I was going to say. What I really like is I'm actually able to, we set up and you get a supply kit. So you actually have one delivered to you or you pick it up. So you can actually cook along or you can cook after. So you get the same ingredients that I use, get them in your home, and you're able to prepare them at home and share with your family, and I make sure that these are nice, family-friendly recipes and things that you can enjoy and your family can try out. So I like that I'm doing that. My next thing up is going to be pasta, making your own homemade pasta. So I've teamed up with some good, I've teamed up with a good folks over at the Ancient Olive. They have an olive oil store in, let's see, Winter Park. Then there's some in St. Pete. There's one in the Villages. So they have several locations, and we're going to be able to distribute. You'll get your pasta flour, and you'll get Ancient Olive oil, and you'll be able to sit in on a class with me and watch how pasta is made. And make your own pasta to eat and enjoy at home. So we're trying to navigate this new normal. And I think that since we have new issues, we have to look at new ways of combating them. And I like this idea of doing pasta. Yes. So I like doing classes like this. I really like it and stuff.
Well, Chefy, thank you for helping us kind of focus on cooling down, you know, not just with the drinking, but also, like you said, you know, we got to take better care of ourselves overall, you know, just managing mm-hmm. the stress and just making sure that we're taking our time, you know, and taking care of all the other issues that we have going on with us, mm-hmm. as well as protecting ourselves against the COVID. So appreciate you taking the time
again.
Take your
vitamins.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Definitely.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Have a blessed day and hopefully talk with you next month. Take care.
Yes. Thank you.
Coming up later this week on G's Power Hour, we are going to talk about 10K Project on Thursday. So I want you to be with us. And again, this month, we are doing Faith Friday, the fourth Friday of the month, and that's coming up this coming Friday. So, you know, be with us. And if you have a faith issue you want us to chat about, you know, let us know. Also, any ideas you have for future shows, hit me up on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. And also, we are taking advertisers as well. So have a blessed day, everybody. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I'm your host, G, and please remember, be well, be safe, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.